Bill Finn, everybody who sees this show you've done of chair drawings feels an intense relationship going on here. And after a while, frankly, we all get to be part of it. But would you tell us how it happened, how this began? What's the history behind this set of gorgeous, gorgeous work?
Well, I guess my mother was throwing out a chair, and I decided to strip it and look at it. And I needed something to put in a setup because I draw once a week with friends, and there was very little there that I was interested in, so I brought the chair. And maybe 2 weeks into drawing it, we found out there were no weapons of mass destruction. And it just hit me, as did the first Iraq war when I was drawing. Hit me very strongly that day because I had two sons that were 18 and 19 years old. And I didn't know what to do. I started to think about it. So when this war started and there were no weapons of mass destruction, the chair became a metaphor for the war. The polished parts of the chair seemed to be the outward stance of our political stance. Polished, pretty, well-defined, nicely carved hands and feet that seemed powerful and true. Our democratic stance. But then as I started to draw the chair, I was looking at the back of the chair, the pieces of wood that were exposed, stripped away, and it was spattered with the stain that created the front of the chair. And there were nail holes, and there were strings hanging, and there were broken pieces that have actually been repaired when it was reupholstered once before. So history seems to be in the back of the chair, and the polished parts was what I guess I was reading in the paper. Why are we doing this? And the drawings began. And so at the time, every Wednesday after teaching, I would go to Walter's studio and draw the chair. And it began to grow and twist. And I would be reading the newspaper during the week, listening to NPR, and getting a little bit more concerned about this folly that we were heading into. And so the chair began to morph and became a major metaphor for how I thought we were being manipulated, how I thought we were being pushed into something that seemed to make no sense. And one thing led to another, and everything that started to happen within visually within the chair and physically within me making the drawing. The physicality of drawing is very important to me. I would play music, listen to Tom Waits, listen to Shostakovich, people who seem to have opinions about things and have a beat and a power in their work that could help me elevate my own marks. And again, the physicality of what you see and how it changes in front of you in a drawing becomes very important.
How many drawings in the series now, Bill?
Now there's over 500. I can't stop.
By now, the chair has a life of its own. It writhes, it climbs, it dismembers itself, it turns red, it catches fire, it becomes barbed wire. I mean, many, many things have happened to this chair. Do you want to, is there a short biography of this chair in 500 frames?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a biography. I think I'm really affected by the daily news. I turned the chair upside down once, the cast shadows on the table that it was on. look like a figure, I thought it was Abu Ghraib. I free associate with the image that I'm looking at. I don't preconceive it too much. I let it kind of pass through me. I try to be one with it and one with why I'm drawing it. I don't have a preconceived. I don't sit down and wait or write out a number of things I want to do. I just let it happen. And somehow I feel like I'm a conduit that allows me, the chair, and the political world that it exists in come together.
There's another piece of that history here I'd love you to dwell on, which is the history of your craft, your hand, your art. It is such an extraordinarily confident line you make in charcoal on white paper, Bill. What can you tell us about that, the history of your own technique?
Well, I went to the Museum School of Fine Arts in Boston. I actually started in commercial art, and I had a teacher there, Mr. Ward, and I had already taken second year drawing. And so he said, where are your drawings, when I went into printmaking? And I said, well, I already took second year drawing. I don't need to take it this year. And he looked at me in awe, and he said, you're going to have to draw for the rest of your life if you want to be an artist. And somehow that changed me. And I started drawing a lot. And it became a passion, and along with printmaking. And I just couldn't stop. And he would put things in a pile. He'd say, this is the good one, this is the bad one. And finally one day he said to me, Bill, what are these drawings about? And I looked at him. I didn't know what I was supposed to say. And he says, well, are they about the model? Are they about you? Or are they about the bomb? And all of a sudden it hit me that drawing had to have some meaning, not just craft, not just some sort of excellence that we all shoot for. And that started me again. Mm-hmm. And I got out of school. I got a job as a graphic designer. And 3 months into that, they called me up and asked me if I wanted to assist in drawing at the museum school. I said yes. I never thought I would teach. There was not in my mind. I never took courses that way. But I did like to do it. And that's the beginning. People used to say to me that I didn't have a job. I was having too much fun doing what I liked. And Joseph Campbell said it better than anybody else, follow your bliss. I like to draw, and that's what I've been doing for the last 40 years.
And then there's a fellowship of draftsmen that have been meeting once a week for forever and ever.
Yes. Well, Walter Paschke was one of my teachers, and once I was hired, we became good friends and started to draw every Saturday. And we started with the model. And pretty soon that got kind of boring, so we would go out to Grossman's Junkyard, which was out on Route 3. It had all sorts of war things from the past. And finally we found an engine. There was a 12-cylinder engine, half crated, and he and I drew that for a year, once a week. And after that, he and I drew for once a week for approximately 40 years. He's the only man that I ever drew with that wouldn't quit. I went up to him one day. We were drawing in my cellar in East Boston. We had started at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I went over to him at 3 o'clock in the evening, in the morning, and I said, Walt, I can't go any further. And he looked at me and he said, well, you picked up the last piece of paper and I wasn't quitting. So he drove me and I drove him into probably a good 15,000 drawings once a week over the years. And he was out here. I got the chair and took it to his studio. And then when he went into a nursing home, he would come over here on Wednesdays and we'd draw the chair. And it's still going on. He's passed away, but He was a major force in my life. He was an amazing artist, and now he's got work in the Museum of Fine Arts, and it's truly great to know that.
So we come into 2004, and this chair, and a relationship that maybe is just beginning, Bill. Take us into one or more of these drawings, and
well, I think at first I was excited about the frame. I mean, as an artist, there's two things we're going with. We're going with our emotional shot, and we're going with a formal aspect of drawing. I mean, I love the white paper. I love the rectangle that I make marks in. So everything is considered in a compositional way. So I'm playing a line against the edge. I'm playing a mass of marks against a very delicate system of marks. Very musical to me. I see it as music. I don't always see it as just line and form somehow. I like the idea of even drawing to a beat or making up my own beat to it. And then, you know, there was actually one drawing. It was an accident. I had hung a few things on the chair just to break up the chair a bit, so I didn't copy a chair too completely. And I went to erase something to make it a little whiter, and I had a piece of black pigment in the eraser, and I made a black line. And that changed the way I had to kind of... So I darkened a whole negative space, and all of a sudden it got even more dark and ominous to me. And so that, I think, kicked it off again. But the evolution of this stance, the stance of the political stance saying, if you weren't for this war, you were against the troops, that made me very angry. It made me start to realize that the legs of the chair that have this hint, it's not a great chair. I mean, it was not expensive, I'm sure, in the beginning. But it has a couple of carved lines in it that indicate a claw and a ball. And so I overstate that all the time, because the claw and the ball, control of the universe, or the world, seems to be what I'm sensing. And it has a stance that's so aggressive and so powerful that what do you do with that? And yet, and it's kind of righteous. That's the other thing that really hurts me, that it's a righteous stance for democracy. And I'm all for democracy, but I hate it being used to pummel us into submission. I want it to be something we give people, not crush them to give it to them. And that's what I draw. I draw the fact that sometimes the leg of that chair is so much a claw and a power, and the residue of the chair, the back of it, the nuances of the arms are frail and fragile. And the threads and some of the parts that I left on the chair and all the stained parts in the back are the people that are left. The residue of a moral stance, which I have a lot of questions about.
Red crayon comes into the drawings and all hell breaks loose in a certain way. How did that happen?
I think, you know, again, there are formal elements that have to go down. I think I needed some other way of playing the drawings. And the red, I didn't see the red as blood. I still don't. I see it as a kind of nervousness to the white that's different than the black and white. And there's this, it becomes another gray. It becomes a gray that's an active, agitating element. Plus, it smears well, and it's wax. And when I put the red down and erase it, and draw over it, it changes the mark. I can't draw over it completely. It has a certain resistance, so it smears well, and I've become active with the eraser and the smear and the mark. Hmm. And it seems to also make the drawings a lot more physical. It talks about the physicality of the act of making the drawing, which I find the Iraq War is very physical, except in the newspaper and in many of the other things that we get information about. There are people that are losing limbs. There is, you know, blood on the wall. There's destruction all over the place, and we just get this little shot of a car that's been destroyed. And they say, oh, there was a bombing and 8 people died. Well, all we see is the car and a little boy in a white shirt, which contradicts what might have happened. And so when I see that in a newspaper, the back of my neck gets a little bit anxious, and I start drawing with a little bit more vengeance. I try to get at, what are they trying to tell me? That this war is okay because there's still a little boy in a white shirt? I've got 20 pictures that the Globe has put out of a little boy in a white shirt next to a burnt-out car, or living people next to destruction. They never show what I read in the paper not too long ago, that this man was describing body parts flying by him. Now that gave me a chill. And I think we have to say that more often.
There's a TV screen in the back of the chair in the drawing I'm looking at, Bill. There are others in which the chair seems to be upholstered with newspapers. Translate.
Well, the TV came because George Bush gave his surge speech. Happened to be the night that I had been drawing all day. I finished dinner. I came out to hear the speech. I put the TV in the chair, and I started drawing the chair and the speech together. Mm. And naturally, I couldn't draw the president, and I realized that, again, we were kind of, we had nothing to say about it. And so I just decided to leave the TV set blank, just have nothing there. I don't see anything about the war really in the news anymore on any of the major channels, but I see the war dissolving in front of us. No one in the country seems to be paying much attention. And that's why I started adding the newspaper. The newspaper says, or has an article about something that happened that day, but there's none of the pros and cons. We don't know any in-depth questioning about this. We're just going forward with the war. And so I'm just indicating type that isn't saying anything. Chaos seems to be part of what I'm playing with. When I do a drawing, the first drawing of the day is usually something that's a little bit more of a search. I find out who I am that day. So I caress the paper a bit. I go looking. I rearrange the chair, or the two chairs that I play now, and I go searching. And
take us along.
Well, it's I kind of hold the charcoal very lightly and flat, so it just kind of cruises over. I create clouds and, in a way, kind of like looking at a series of clouds. And I'm looking at the chair, I'm looking at these marks I'm making that are not substantial, and then I can bite into something that happens. I see, or I lock into something, and I probably overdo the first drawing. I kind of put in too much information. The second drawing, I'm feeling a lot more secure, and I start to focus, and then probably the third drawing, I can edit it down and put the full physicality of my arm into it. Hmm. I like making the drawing feel like someone was there. I want a drawing to have what I consider perpetual motion. Every time you look at it, it's still moving. It's not going to burn out. It doesn't need a battery. It's there. and I want you to feel the fact that I was there making it.
These chairs have body, they have weight, they have muscle.
Oh yeah, they've become animated. They really do have a sense of that. I did 40 smaller drawings, 14 by 17, in one day to see what I might come up with. So I started at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I went through two full pads of paper. And when I was finished, around 8 o'clock at night, I realized I was drawing the wounded soldier also. And I do think about the soldier that's fighting there. I think especially the ones that are being wounded and that have to come back from that war knowing what they must know about it, that it's maybe futile, that it's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. And I want to get that into this game. I want to get it into the drawings. So now I have this double edge. I have the power of the chair and the establishment to deal with. And many times it's the establishment dragging one limb behind them. Or maybe one limb is sinking into oil, just a black substance or sand. So that I can get both. I realized a long time ago that whatever your metaphor is, it's more complicated than you can grasp. It morphs into other aspects of things. Nothing's black or white. I want you to feel my energy coming through. I mean, I really do believe that a drawing, the way you caress the paper tells the story. I think Francis Bacon said it's the texture of the paint hits the nervous system before the image. And then I think MIT even said something about that when they were discussing how we look at paintings. So we pick up the subliminal in the whole thing before the image. So before you recognize the chair, I've already hit you with a flashing of black and white and marks that set the key. It's like looking at the opening credits to a movie. They're beginning to tell you what you're going to see. I'm always asked the question, what am I going to do when the war is over? And I don't think I'm going to stop drawing the chair. I think my first thought is, I don't think injustice will ever be over. And I think the chair will become, it'll step into another world.
You said a moment ago that there's more here than your own head can quite grasp. What part of Bill Flynn is rendering these drawings now?
I guess it's the older part. Maybe it's the part that my father was always aware of the political connotations of things. He wasn't well read about it. He was very brilliant with electronics and things like that, but he had a sense of politics. He had a sense of the futility of war. He had a sense of how war is manipulated. He used to tell me the story about, Reggie Butler or something, who was a general in one of the little skirmishes we had with Spain, and he said he refused to go back into battle and would shoot his sons if they joined the Marines, because he was shooting Remington rifles at the enemy and they were shooting Remington bullets back at him. And he realized that they were just selling weapons to anybody that needed them. And they didn't care about the war. They cared about selling munitions. And I think that's still going on. That scares me. And that makes me draw harder.
Bill Flynn, let's talk about the chairs that are in your head, in your hand today, the last ones.
I did these four yesterday. The more complete chair is the first one, but it was, as Peter Thebold, who I work with here also said, it's something I know how to do. So I kind of looked at it, I worked at it, I tried to work it out, and then I put it, that was done, and then I went to the next one. And I edited it, and I put the TV in it, and I tried to change, I tried to draw the TV in a sense that, in a way that it was a white shape that should be forward, but now it's embedded in the chair. And it has just some lines in it that indicate a deep space or maybe some static. The next one, I added the red and the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And the hash marks at the very bottom, there's 15 lines with four and a line through it, which again is my way of counting.
Is a body count of some sort?
Well,
Chair count?
I'm not saying what it is, but it's a count. And we're counting days, we're counting bodies, we're counting the history that this war will have on our lives for a long time to come. Someone said the other day that this war is going to cost us a lot more in the next 40 years of the veterans who are going to have to be taken care of, their families. And again, that becomes part of the root that bothers me, that and now that they're coming back and they're going to be tortured for years because of this war. And the last one, I think I have the chair forcing its way into the newspaper. I have hints of dark marks that define the physicality of the chair, which could be eyes, could be skulls, could be... I don't know. But yet one leg has got a strong stance. The other arm of the chair has brass knuckles of a sort. It's dragging the other leg along a horizon line. It seems to be flailing at itself more than it is at anything else. And that's where I left it yesterday.
What is an artist with an acute sense of imagery and associations make of the pictures of this war, and maybe the non-pictures of this war that we see on television or in the news everywhere?
Well, I don't think we see enough. I don't think we see anything but the homogenized McDonald's version of things. I don't think we're getting any sense of what's going on. I mean, even if they would just show a little footage of a real building that's been blown out, Americans might get a sense of what this is about. So I'm just nonplussed by how the media is treating this horror show.
Can you imagine how they might fight about it? I mean, where would they start drawing the line?
Oh, I'd like to start drawing the line with the money. Greed is ruining this country. Everybody wants to get something for nothing, and everybody wants to make millions. What about just being happy with what you have? And that's part of me drawing the chair. I'm amazed at the greed in this country. And that makes me know that my chair will probably go on for a long time. It might change shape. It might become something else. But I think I've found something that I'm not going to be able to let go of for a long time.
Bill Flynn, Bill Flynn, the people who've started this trip with you aren't going to let it go either. It's such a privilege to be with you in your studio in Savin Hill in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Thank you, Bill Flynn. It's a great pleasure to hear you on Open Source.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Let's go! skim the wheel.